All right, great. So good afternoon. I'm glad you all made your way down this far into the convention center. Can everyone hear me all right? Move this up a little. All right. So before I begin, I just want to state I have no financial relationships to disclose. I also wanted to acknowledge our co-authors, one of whom is here today, Wenwei Lee from New York City. You can wave. Wenwei's up here in the front. Some of the others who contributed to this project and to ongoing surveillance efforts in New York City. So New York City is one of 57 local death registration jurisdictions in the United States and is responsible for registering approximately 53,000 deaths a year. In 2005, New York City implemented an electronic death registration system, which I'll refer to as the EDRS through the presentation. By 2010, over 93% of records were electronically submitted rather than on paper certificates. So on October 29, 2012, Hurricane Sandy made landfall approximately 100 miles south of New York City, bringing record-breaking storm surge and high winds. This caused flooding across coastal areas, widespread power outages, transit shutdowns, displaced populations, and disrupted healthcare and pharmacy access. So in response, New York City's Health Department utilized the EDRS, the Electronic Death Registration System, to conduct real-time mortality surveillance. And in generally, what we found is that there were 44 directly hurricane-related deaths. There was also an 11% increase in mortality directly after the storm during to all causes, all-cause mortality, compared with 2010-2011. So this was the first major emergency in New York City since the EDRS had been implemented, and there was a need for timely information on death to inform the ongoing disaster response. However, there are sort of few examples nationally about how to use EDRS for this purpose. At the same time, the Health Department faced a number of challenges that threatened to disrupt the reporting and routine registration of deaths. There was widespread disruptions in the city infrastructure, which included actually our own building, the Health Department building, which was downtown Manhattan, that ended up closing for a week, which meant we relocated staff to a satellite office in Brooklyn, and had to communicate with facilities, a lot of whom were struggling with either evacuations or disrupted internet service to maintain their operations. And these are just some examples. So therefore, our research question for this presentation was the New York City electronic death system effectively adapted to provide disaster-related mortality surveillance during and after Hurricane Sandy? So to answer this, I'm just going to go through our routine death reporting in New York City, talk about some of our Sandy surveillance objectives and our methods, a little bit about how we evaluated the performance of the system, and end with some conclusions and best practices. So, the New York City EDRS is a web-based platform which allows medical facilities and funeral directors to report deaths electronically. So they use a web page like the one shown here to search for or enter information on a death. There are a couple key steps in death registration, which I'm going to show in a flow chart. So after a death occurs, a clinician or a medical examiner medically certifies the death with key fields, including the cause of death. So the medical examiner is doing certifying the unnatural death, injury or sudden death, or hurricane-related death. The funeral director then completes the demographic and disposition information and submits the record to the health department to review and register. So one important thing to note here is that the EDRS is a dynamic system, meaning that data entered initially when the record's medically certified, shown here as a preliminary death record, is then updated when the funeral director completes and then the death is registered. So this becomes the registered death record, and this is a point I'll pick up on later in the presentation. So as I mentioned, the cause of death section, shown here in the screenshot, is one of the key fields that the medical provider or examiner completes. A clinician enters information on the causes that lead to the death, starting with the underlying condition in line D, and moving up to the most recent condition, depending on how many causes they see. We describe these as free text fields, which I'll refer to throughout the presentation. Only in cases that are under investigation by the medical examiner can they put something called pending further studies. This is then amended after the cause is determined. And again, I'll pick up on this in terms of our surveillance. So after the death is registered, the Bureau of Vital Statistics, which is where I work, is responsible for conducting a number of additional steps, again, in routine reporting. So they assign ICD-10 codes to the free text cause of death, the majority of which can be done using the software program. They geocode the address of residence. They create electronic records for the minimal paper certificates, which are still delivered to the health department. And they also enforce reporting mandates for use and timeliness. And as I had shown in the flowchart, this is usually 24 hours for the medical certification and 72 hours for complete registration. BVS is also responsible for creating weekly mortality reports. Again, this is just on routine for the registered deaths. So those are some of the routine operations of our death system. Now I'll turn to some of our specific objectives for Hurricane Sandy. So our surveillance objectives were twofold. First, we needed to know how many Sandy-related deaths occurred during the hurricane. The case definition included directly or indirectly fatal injuries by the hurricane, and this was based on the determination of our Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. So their acronym is OCME, so I'll refer to them as that. Second, given some of the ongoing environmental hazards, as I described, these were sort of things that kept going in the weeks following Hurricane Sandy, we needed to know if there was any increase in mortality due to all causes in the weeks following the storm. So towards this first point, the Sandy deaths, we had to first identify them in a timely manner. And so to do this, we collaborated with our OCME to get a line listing of all probable cases. We took a number of additional steps to ensure that deaths were actually being captured by the OCME. So we added a pop-up to our EDRS system, which the provider would see before they were about to certify the death, reminding them to refer any cases that they thought were related to the storm to our medical examiner. We also monitored news outlets and media inquiries that were coming in to see if there were any deaths that had been unidentified previously that the news was picking up on. And finally, we conducted a text string search, again, for those cause of death fields for specific injury-related terms as a backup method. And I'll show those list of terms in a second. So once we had this list, then we ran some basic frequencies on the 44 deaths for age, sex, address, cause of death. Just to give you an idea, this is the list of text string search terms, which our injury prevention staff at the Health Department had constructed for us based on previous literature. So we flagged records that had any occurrence of these terms in the cause of death section. You can see it's pretty wide-ranging, but again, we were looking for anything that could have been related to Hurricane Sandy. For our second objective, we again were looking at an increase in all deaths. So to do this, and to get the most timely counts of deaths that we could, we extracted those preliminary records that I mentioned. And again, I'll put this up. The ones shown here in red, we extracted these preliminary records using new SQL queries, which were somewhat new for us. And because of the reporting mandates, as I mentioned, these preliminary records are generally available within 24 hours. So it was a very timely surveillance. We then created daily death reports, which compared 2012 death counts with 2010-2011, so averages. So you can see here a sample report where we compared all deaths given on a given day with the average of deaths from 2010-2011 to then get, in the final column, a percent difference, which we considered the excess in deaths. Additional summary reports stratified deaths by age, cause of death, and proximity to the flooding. So this was to start to explore any trends that we were seeing in excess death. And we had to take a number of additional sort of analytical steps to make sure that our reports were reflecting some of the changes that were taking place in the population due to the storm. So the first one, we had to adjust some of the baseline data for the same delay in reporting, depending on what date we were using for the date of either certification or registration. We had to ended up removing the nursing home deaths because of the evacuation of this population, which would have suppressed death counts relative to prior years in those neighborhoods. And finally, we worked with the Environmental Health Bureau on the definition of the flooding zone, which was a struggle for a lot of people working on surveillance post-Sandy, and how to operationalize that in the reports. So in the end, what we worked with was a definition that categorized the proportion of the residents addressed by census tract that was in a specified flood zone. And I'll show you an example of that. So I have two sample reports I'm going to show. And again, these were for response, so it's more preliminary. But the first one shows, again, this impact zone, so comparing overall death counts over probably roughly a 10-day period, 2010, 11, 12, and then the percent difference stratified by what we saw as the proportion of the census tract. So this would give us idea, you know, in a census tract that was over 75% flooded, was the increase in deaths, you know, in that population. And you can see here that the increase isn't necessarily in that flooding area. Another example is stratifying by cause of death. So again, we could look at some major causes, groupings of cause of death, and again, look at the percent difference by the cause to see, okay, is the excess grouping in one particular cause or another? And here you can see for pneumonia and influenza and then other causes, that was what we were seeing. And this still needs some further investigation, which I'll get to. So now just in terms of what we did retrospectively to evaluate the system, I'll present some attributes. So I'm going to go through four specific attributes: the usefulness of the data, stability, timeliness, and quality. So briefly, just the usefulness, I'll say what we found, how we used it. Stability, I'll look at any outages to the electronic system, and the proportion of records that ended up still being submitted electronically. For timeliness, I'm going to look at some of the intervals between death and medical certification and then death and registration, and also some of the dates that deaths were identified and reports were created. And then finally, for quality, I wanted to present some information on how these preliminary records that we extracted compared with the final registered record, and also some information on how many deaths ended up having a pending cause, which really does limit the surveillance potential because you don't have a cause to do that, some of that stratification. And then finally, how the free text string search method actually identified deaths. So in terms of usefulness, again, we did identify 44 Sandy deaths. Our reports with the preliminary death records provided, you know, almost next day estimates of death counts and did identify some increase, that 11% increase in all-cause mortality. And then the more detailed demographic information allowed for some initial exploration of this excess by cause, by flooding zone. However, this does need some further investigation. In terms of stability, our EDRS system didn't face any major outages despite some of the disruptions I mentioned. However, externally, we know that a number of hospitals, you know, either were evacuated or had disrupted internet service, which meant that sometimes they delayed their process of registration. And yet, despite some of these disruptions, electronic reporting really did remain high. So the day of the storm, October 29th, it was 96%. The day after the storm, it did go down a little bit to 92%, but over an 11-day period, it was at 94%, which is our average for the electronic system. In terms of timeliness, we saw virtually no delays in the time it took to medically certify the death, so that's that initial step. We did see some increase in the time it took to register the deaths, and I'll show you a graph just to give you an idea. So this is the median days to first medically certify on the left and then to register the death by year over this 11-day period. So it compares 2010, 11, and 12. And you can see for medically certified, the time it took to do that in the same time period was virtually the same across years. However, for registration, you know, the average of 2010, 2011 was around 2.2, 2.3, and it almost goes up a full day during the same time period in 2011. You know, in terms of our reporting, the actual Sandy-related deaths was 44 deaths. On average, you know, the median time was about 6 days for it to get into our system, which is relatively timing for deaths that, you know, are undergoing investigation. And then the daily death reports, they were created pretty soon after the storm. We did have some delays in terms of creating the specifications for those reports since it was a new thing for us. And like I said, the preliminary deaths, it actually took us about 10 days after the storm to develop those specific reports. And finally, for quality, when I did a retrospective comparison of the preliminary record with the final registered record, you know, the required fields we're 100% complete, which is more a product of our system and some of the hard edits that are in there. But more importantly, it actually had a really high concordance with the final record, so people weren't changing, you know, from the time of certification, they weren't changing fields when it got registered, which is important if you're going to be using that preliminary data. Also, the free text method didn't actually identify any additional deaths. Again, this was more of a backup on what the medical examiner was doing, which again is, we did have some where, you know, we could see maybe something that could have been related, and once we referred it, they, you know, determined that it wasn't related. And then finally, I ran a bit of analysis on our records in October and November, and what I found on average is that about 6% of all the deaths had a pending cause, which is pretty small, really, when you're thinking of doing surveillance. And importantly, only one of the Sandy-related deaths, those 44 deaths, had the pending cause, which meant we really could determine cause pretty early on with those direct deaths. So, for conclusions, the original question was, you know, was the EDRS effectively adapted to provide disaster-related mortality surveillance? And what we found is the EDRS really did maintain stability, timeliness, and quality during and after the storm. And so the system, combined with some of the enhancements that we did, really allowed for rapid reporting of Sandy-related deaths and this any excess in all-cause mortality. Out of these findings, we developed four sort of best practices for conducting surveillance using an EDRS. First, a relationship with the local medical examiner or coroner is essential for the determination and identification of disaster deaths. So in our case, you know, the 44 deaths that got flagged was really because of that line listing that they sent us and then the detailed cause of death information that they were filling out, which had search terms like Sandy or Hurricane in them, so we could identify them. And some of the other methods we used, again, act as a backup, looking at the media, using free text, cause of death field searching. Second, the reporting mandates for use and timeliness are really needed to ensure the availability of the mortality data. So again, our local health code mandates that 24-hour initial certification, 72-hour registration, and because we were able to successfully maintain this, it meant that for the most part, we had our data really available for the response efforts. Third, having the local capacity to do the cause of death coding, extract the data from our system with queries, monitor, you know, what's going on with the system, and also how to analyze the deaths and some of the, you know, nuances of creating those reports was really important for surveillance. And finally, you know, a certain amount of flexibility and creativity is needed to adapt to the unique features of the emergency. So during Sandy, that meant, you know, moving our entire office to a new building, working remotely, developing new enhancements and reports based on sort of what was coming in as the latest information about, you know, what people thought the storm effects were. We also identified some limitations. So, you know, the first is that although it was great, we had the OCME, we are also, you know, in some ways reliant on their determination of the Sandy-related death. And their focus, you know, is more on the injuries and less sometimes on the public health surveillance. And as such, it's possible their definition was kind of more conservative than other places. You know, and in general, definitions of what a disaster death is can range from state to state, which makes comparisons very difficult. Second, like I had mentioned before, we did have some delays in developing the specifications for the reports. And so, you know, for instance, I couldn't measure the quality of those preliminary records directly after the storm because we hadn't even started developing those reports until 10 days after. Just to put this in a little bit of context, you know, the EDRS systems have been starting to roll out nationally, and it really does create new opportunities for surveillance that weren't possible when there were paper records. And this has applications beyond just disaster deaths. I mean, we have an EIS officer in our bureau who's been looking at it for influenza-related deaths, drug-related deaths, you know, also applicable to sort of the mass fatality management. And there is growing momentum, but a lot of need for resources and technical assistance to get states to the place where they can be doing this kind of surveillance. So just for instance, this was the latest thing I had found that, you know, despite the fact that probably about 38 of the states have an EDRS, there's only 6 that have over 80% electronic submission. So there's still, even though the system's there, they're still getting a lot of paper records, which again limits possibilities. So just some next steps. We do want to develop more standardized reportings for a given disaster, again, so that we wouldn't have some of those delays, and perhaps even some algorithms for syndromes that might be of interest depending on what the disaster is. And this is kind of borrowing from some syndromic surveillance methods, if anyone is familiar with that. We're also planning to do some further analysis of the all-cause deaths. Like I mentioned, there, you know, it was sort of an unanswered question for us and needs more research. And luckily, we did get a grant recently from the CDC to do some of this. So, you know, a more complex time series method using hospital discharge data to look at some of the evacuation. And also thinking of how we can maybe identify more of the indirect deaths, since, like I mentioned, the definition was fairly conservative in New York. And just finally, you know, considering some other enhancements that the EDRS could have, things like, you know, maybe creating a preliminary cause of death field or putting the zip code initially on at the time of certification so that we could have that information sooner. I think I'm out of time. So thank you so much. Do I have any time for questions?